Today's News Talk Radio, TNT, with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast.
Russian elections are rigged. Political opponents are imprisoned or otherwise eliminated from participating in the electoral process. The result is an absence of checks and balances in Russia, and the decision of one man to launch a wholly unjustified and brutal invasion of Iraq. I mean, of Ukraine. Iraq, too. Anyway. 75.
Oops, George Bush, a Freudian slip, calling himself the accidental demon. It's an epic snafu, an embarrassing moment. He tried to turn the corner on it. A moment he tried to escape with his charm and humor and aw-shuck sensibility that helped commit his war crimes. But the truth is what the truth is, and he told the truth accidentally. And that's the thing about truth. It hits different. The truth just hits different. And once it comes out of the box, it spreads wings and floats there like an alien bird. So he just blamed it on his age, and people laughed to make the awkwardness go away. But his campaign to create a media narrative was taken all the way off track, because, Georgie boy, you were just telling us who the demon was, who the new bad man was, who we were supposed to condemn on social media and without a doubt know that he be a monster, and we could never ourselves be guilty of something similar. We could never be that. But then you accidentally reminded us that we were exactly that not so long ago, and perhaps still are. Who knows? Who knows how to get accurate information in a world gone bananas, where really the only thing you can be sure of is propaganda? It's coming to a 3-pound universe near you, so look out. Is Putin a diabolical monster? Probably. Is he on that hill alone, a cartoon supervillain with no one else on his level of madness or hunger for power? I don't know. Maybe ask George. Sometimes true wisdom comes out of the mouth of an idiot. And imagine living in a country where elections are rigged. We'll be right back with TNT Radio.
Engaged and informed conversation.
They say what I'm thinking.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. TNT.
Dr. Bob Lawrence, sir, is a Democratic candidate for Michigan's 1st District and congregational seat. He says, I would be honored to represent all the residents of the district, including the young and the old, people of all genders. That includes you and me. Those that agree and disagree with me. Those that agree and disagree with me. Dr. Bob Lawrence, sir, is a Democratic candidate for Michigan's 1st District Congressional seat, and he's on our show now. Welcome, Dr. Bob.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on. How's your evening treating you? And I'm assuming you're calling in from Michigan.
Yeah, calling in. It's 10 o'clock at night and getting ready to travel again tomorrow morning to another county for campaigning.
And what's campaigning been like for you? How are you getting on with it? Is this your first run? And what made you decide to run?
Yeah, it's my first run for a political office. And I tell people, as you know, I get asked frequently, why am I running? And I said, simply to make where we live a better place to work, live, and play.
Well, that's cool. So tell us about what got you into making the run, and what you intend to bring to Michigan as the Congress seat.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been upper Michigan and northern Michigan is the very rural part of Michigan. We're 8 hours away from Detroit. So we have more woods and probably more deers and animals than we have people. I came back from my last tour in the Foreign Service where I was working as a diplomat, providing medical care. My last tour is in Iraq. After that tour, came back to retired and there was a need in the community, and I became the public health medical director for four of the health departments in the Upper Peninsula. Then so while doing that, if that wasn't enough, I got recruited to run for the first district to see if I would do a better job than our current representative. After months of saying no, I finally said yes, because I think the other person in his role with our, what we call January 6th, our insurrection, was just unacceptable. So I joined the race, and here I go.
So January 6th was a big motivational force, I guess, huh? I mean,
yeah, it was a huge motivational force. We disagree about many different things of how the people in the first district could be represented, and as a federal person, but January 6th and our threat to our elections and our democracy was a game changer, and our Congress. Our congressperson who I'm running against supports the insurrection. He still will not call Biden our duly elected president. If you like it or like him or not, he is our duly elected president in fair and free elections. So yes, that brought me in.
So there was nothing about that election that made you scratch your head or cause any suspicion in your head at all about it, huh?
Yeah. The last four years in the United States has made me scratch my head quite a bit. But the election itself, when you end up having our Republicans and our Democrats that oversee the local, state, and federal elections, all of them saying it was a free and fair election, right? That there was no demonstrable voter fraud. When you end up looking at our state and federal courts saying the same thing, including our Supreme Court, you know, eventually you have to trust somebody. And I trust the Republicans. I trust the Republicans and the Democrats that oversaw the election and our courts that stated the election was fair.
Well, and what do you think of the way the direction the country's heading in now? What do you think about the problems with inflation and gas prices and just the general direction? I mean, do you think Biden is doing a good job, or are you concerned?
Yeah, we have to be really careful when we end up saying, is Biden doing a good job, or is Biden responsible for our gas prices, the inflation? Was he responsible for COVID? There's many things that the president is not responsible for. Trump was not responsible for COVID. He was not, and Biden is not responsible for a lot of things that he gets blamed upon. You know, we have our problems. The world has their problems. Inflation is a problem. Energy is an issue. There's multiple issues, but I think I'm done with the Republicans and the Democrats in my country trying to point fingers at each other, blaming each other to try to stay in power or to win, versus end up saying, we have a problem, let's address it, let's fix it, let's work together. Our country needs to work together to solve problems.
Well, getting off of the, you know, Trump versus Biden thing, just speaking more in general about the direction of the country. He's printing a lot of money. I mean, 20% of the money supply, I guess he's been printing. So that's what's causing inflation. But I'm not really interested in getting argument about Biden versus Trump or anything like that. More just in general, we are definitely in some very scary times, and it's looking bleaker and bleaker in terms of inflation and what that means to the American people. I'm just wondering if that concerns you and what you think should be done about it without bashing Trump or without bashing Trump or Biden, just in general. And whoever you think is at fault with it, let's put that to the side and just look at what the situation is and go like, okay, this is very problematic. What do we do about it?
Yeah. Okay. So the first thing I think that you have to end up doing with problems is to find out what the problem is and what caused it. So let's stay with inflation. So if we end up, let's just end up 8, you know, we're at 8%. I mean, okay, 8.3, probably higher, but let's look at inflation. So 2% of inflation is what the economists say is good for the world. All right, that's fine. All right, then how did we get to 8? Let's put 2% in now for the COVID. You know, just the COVID with the supply shortage, economics again, you end up having, increased demand right now and decreased production because of the COVID problems throughout the world. Throughout the world, this is. So let's give 2% to the COVID. Let's give 1 to 2% of the inflation from the overstimulation that the American, said the U.S. has given our population. That's where you said you printed your money. 1 to 2% of that. Let's then go 2%. Another 2% is because of the Ukraine war, the Russia issue. That's the food and the gas. So when you end up looking, 2% is good. 2% is the COVID, and the COVID pandemic still with the problem with supply chain. 1 to 2% because we overstimulated, and 2% from the Ukraine. That's 8%. So then you have to end up saying, okay, what can we do about it? The COVID supply chain is to solve the COVID in the world. You know, Biden has nothing to do with probably China shutting down and doing a lot of their, where a lot of manufacturing comes from. The 2% from the Ukraine, Russia and Ukraine, very important issues, right? Extremely important for multiple different issues, but there's your food and your energy. And the overstimulation, 1% to 2%. It's just not America that has 8% inflation. Canada didn't get a lot of money in there. I think their inflation rate is about 6%. The UK, most of Europe. I don't know. What's the inflation rate down in Australia?
I don't know. I'm in Arizona. Okay, we're just talking through Australia. Yeah, I'm an American. Okay,
yeah. All right. So then it comes down to there's a worldwide inflation rate, and inflation in the United States has in general been 1 to 2% higher than say other Western countries, including Europe. That's just us. We've been that way for decades. So when you end up looking at your, like, I think the United Kingdom is probably having higher inflation than we have. So I don't want to say it's whose fault it is. It really comes down to what are the causes of the inflation. And I just broke it down to 4 different issues. So yeah, we're going to probably live with that Russia and the Ukraine 1 or 2%. The COVID supply, hopefully when COVID starts quieting down, the supply chain will get better. And the 1 to 2% that was from the overstimulation will start is disappearing. So let's hope for the best, huh? Let's hope for the best. I think the inflation's not going to go away quickly. But to blame it all on printed money, no, not true. Not true whatsoever.
But so and you think it's did you approve of them giving $40 billion to Ukraine?
Yeah, now that's a foreign policy, isn't it? We spend a lot of money in the United States. So $40 billion to Ukraine sounds like it was pretty much, now that was bipartisan. The Republicans and Democrats gave into there. The Ukraine, I call it a war. The Ukraine, Russia, it's a war. And it's a war probably for democracy more than anything else. And the United States is really participating. I wish that maybe some of the other countries would put in their fair amount. But what does the United States do? Should we just stand back? Should we just stand back and let it happen? Do we give them Ukraine? I don't think Ukraine would have made it without Western support. But, when Finland, Sweden, Switzerland, when these other countries agree with the United States approach, that's reassuring to me. That's reassuring.
What about the stat that $6 billion would solve world hunger?
I'm not sure if that's true. Where did that stat come from?
That's just what I've been hearing, that like it was $6 billion. I mean, it would certainly do a lot to help end world hunger. And, so $40 billion is a lot of money in a time when we're having, impending food shortages, babies, you know, baby formula supply running low and sometimes impossible to get. It just seems like there's a lot of problems in our own country that really need to be addressed as well. I don't know.
I think foreign policy, we spend, the United States spends about 1% of our national budget on, if you want to call it, international aid, you know, State Department, USAID, and military assistance. 1%. If that amount of money is well spent, and we probably should be spending much higher than that. Some people will say we're spending 2% if you had the military issues inside of there. If we don't support our colleagues, our other, you know, our colleagues that live in different countries, we're going to pay the price farther down the line. I did not, you know, I served in Iraq, I served in Afghanistan, I served in Pakistan. Do I agree with our mission over there, the 21 years that we spent in Afghanistan? No, I don't. But I think the Russian-Ukraine issue is a totally different issue. And if $40 billion will help our democracy, will help the world out, yes, I think it's worthwhile money spending. We have, so you know, think world hunger. Oh, I got it. Okay, world hunger. You know, we have to, the World Food Program for the United Nations. Yep, we need to support them. But giving food, we have to have show people how to produce the food. And again, if you look at the world hunger problem, is it the shortage of food, or is it the shortage of democracy, the rule of law in those countries? And I think if they end up, if you look at a lot of the famines that are going around in Africa, a lot of it is, if you talk to the World Food Program, the United Nations, if those countries had rule of law, if they had safety over there, they'd probably do an awful lot for their own food hunger problems. And
what about other wars around the world, like Yemen and Ethiopia? Why do you think Ukraine gets all the assistance, but those others don't?
Not completely true. I mean, I served also in Ethiopia, you know, for like 4 months. Ukraine, it's different. Ethiopia, Yemen, Syria, could we say they're more civil wars inside of the country? It's not another country, Russia, attacking an independent democracy. That's Ukraine. That is a completely different issue. Also, what's different about this is that Ukraine and Russia, they're major exporters of food and energy throughout the world. If that issue doesn't solve itself, you know, soon, and unfortunately, I think this is going to go on for years, the world will suffer. If you end up looking at the Russian and Ukrainian food that is exported, we could be talking about famine in Egypt. Unbelievable. Huge issues. The Yemen, sad, absolutely sad. Syria, what a disaster. Ethiopia and the internal strife between the tribes, again, very problematic. Problematic for that region. This is problematic for the world.
Well, it's certainly crazy times. Are you concerned at all with the attack on our civil liberties over the last few years, like with free speech and all the restrictions and everything like that? Does that concern you at all, or were you in support of all that stuff?
Tell me, what restrictions have we had?
Well, just like people getting kicked off of social media and stuff like that for expressing viewpoints that were different from the mainstream narrative on issues such as COVID and issues about early treatment protocols that are safe and effective that, you know, you weren't allowed to talk about and stuff like that. Does any of that concern you?
The issue of free speech and the limitations that are placed on the issues is huge. The United States, we're going to be battled. We have battled with this for a long period of time. I think free speech, that's why I was kind of curious of what you end up worried about. I think, you know, you can't, free speech still has limits, doesn't it? I think active discussions about, say, COVID, different opinions, they're fine. They should continue. When the free speech is, now this gets difficult, when the free speech is say, misinformation and is harming people, or if not killing people, that gets more problematic. But then
but we who have decides to go, well, what misinformation?
Who decides? I'm just going to go.
Yeah.
And as far as I understand, Twitter decided, right? Facebook decided. Twitter decided. I don't think it was our government that decided. These are private enterprises that have decided. Even my medical societies, they actually have decided how far can a doctor go with what they will call is misinformation about, a big one is over the vaccines, that the vaccines have microchips in them and it's destroying people and it's
making the microchip scenario, that's like the lowest common, like that's like the sort of most extreme example,
right.
Of an air quotes conspiracy theory. That's not really what people are concerned about. People are concerned and have legitimate concerns, and there's real scientists that have legitimate concerns that are coming to light now. I mean, and so then if you go to, oh, it's microchips that you're worried about, it just paints the people with concerns as lunatics. But that's really an unfair way to cast people, because that's not most people are concerned about. People are concerned, have legitimate concerns about vaccinating into a pandemic and then making the virus more virulent that way in the end. And it, because everything has to evolve, and people are concerned that safe and effective treatment protocols such as ivermectin were demonized and not allowed to be even used, even though they're safer than Tylenol and stuff like that. So there's legitimate concerns that are far different than just there's microchips in the shot. That's a cheap shot.
Right. But
so to speak.
Well, no, it's not. I'm just using.
Yeah, it's a cheap shot. It's like, come on. It's like that paints the people with concerns as lunatics.
You end up saying, where do you pull the line? Oh, we both agree that the microchips pulled the line. When you end up looking at the debates of ivermectin,
microchips. That's like we're talking about ivermectin, which is.
Oh, then let's talk about ivermectin. I actually just addressed twice today the microchips because I'm a public health medical director still, so it's still out there. If you end up talking about ivermectin, personally, I don't think that debate has been stifled. Okay, maybe I missed it. I don't think it's. I got files of ivermectin. Probably got multiple different articles. Read a couple more today that came from, you know, the journals of the WHO. I read some articles about that. The World Health Organization, JAMA, New England Journal of Medicine. I've heard, listened, debates about ivermectin, other therapies, antidepressant therapies, Lovox, which actually the FDA did not approve of today. Read theirs. I think there's been open discussions. If people feel like the discussions got discounted, I hope that's not true. I do know that they have been disappointed when the FDA did not agree with their opinion. Just like the Lovox today, I read the 25-page, you know, of the antidepressant that was not approved by the FDA, that was requested by a Mayo Clinic infectious disease doctor and multiple other colleagues. They were disappointed about the decision of the FDA. So the ongoing open discussion needs to continue. It needs to be open. I didn't mean to take a cheap shot, but I was taking it, when do you restrict it? And I brought one area up, one area up. So I hope we haven't restricted it, and I haven't restricted it, and I don't support it.
Well, that's good to hear. People are having all kinds of success treating it with, and it's like, you know, when people, you know, the initial protocol was to wait till people were deathly ill, then take them into the hospital, put them on ventilators, mm-hmm. and give them remdesivir, and remdesivir is just been having horrific effects on people. And you have something like ivermectin, which we interview doctors all the time who talk about how successful they are treating people with ivermectin and monoclonal antibodies and vitamin C injections and vitamin D and zinc. And there's a lot of things you can do to to boost your health against COVID before you get to the ventilator remdesivir solution. And the fact that those things were repressed just seems nefarious.
I would have to disagree. I don't think they were repressed. They were talked about. I don't think there is strong evidence at all to support ivermectin. Or vitamin D, or for zinc. I think there's great data with monoclonal antibodies, absolutely wonderful data with monoclonal antibodies and now oral antivirals. Mm. So unless you actually get into the debate, I don't know. Here's where I find it difficult. The public is reading and trying to understand medical literature, and I don't think the public has done that before to the degree. The medical people are having a hard time. The medical people are discussing this. The medical people are disagreeing. So to say that ivermectin works, FDA did not say it works. CDC does not say it works. The European CDC says it doesn't work. The UK doesn't work. And the WHO says it doesn't work. So I guess, you know, who do you trust?
All right, Bob, this is a fiery conversation with Dr. Bob Lorenzer, and he is running for Democratic congressional seat in Michigan's 1st District. We'll be right back after this brief break on TNT Radio.
Trish Wood on TNT Radio.
I thought, well, that's kind of like the end of the war. And then there was another piece that I saw, and I believe it was the Jerusalem Post, which said that two sides are still talking at very high levels. So what I'm wondering is, why am I having to look for that kind of information? Why isn't that top of mind during the newscasts who are instead focusing on refugees and crying babies wrapped in Ukrainian flags waiting at the border? I mean, it would seem to me that those concessions by Zelensky might be a game changer.
Well, yes, but it's a game changer that doesn't favour the current geopolitical, should we say, motivations and aims of the US at the moment.
Trish Wood on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Election 2022, and Australia decides on the 21st of May.
Freedom of speech is fundamental to a civil and democratic society. Open and honest dialogue allows people to share their ideas and opinions without the threat of force and government oppression. Freedom of speech also means hearing opinions that we may not like. Hi, I'm David Limbrick, and I'm your Victorian Senate candidate for the Liberal Democrats. I want to talk to you about the 9th policy in the Liberal Democrats' Freedom Manifesto, free speech. The free exchange of ideas and opinions allows these ideas and opinions to be tested, with the more robust being accepted. The Liberal Democrats will do three things. Firstly, abolish Section 18C of the Discrimination Act. This piece of legislation makes it unlawful to offend, insult, or humiliate, and hauls those who fall foul of it up before tribunals headed by bureaucrats at the Australian Human Rights Commission. It's an affront to free speech and the idea of a fair trial. Secondly, we'll stop media censorship. A decade and a half ago, the consensus in the West was that it was necessary to censor what was thought to be radical propaganda, but this has led to an internet filter consisting of thousands of blocked websites for a wide range of reasons. Some of these may be well-intentioned, but putting this power in the hands of the government can rapidly turn into the banning of anything that does not suit their political agenda. It's too much power for any government to have. And finally, we encourage a free and open internet. Much of the increasingly political censorship imposed by tech companies is done in fear of further regulation being targeted at them to tackle what they think to be misinformation or fake news. This is particularly true in Australia, where platforms and page owners can be held liable for what is posted by other people. A clear framework of less internet censorship by the government would take away much of the incentive for tech companies to censor their own content. If this policy is implemented, Australia will become a place where ideas are discussed freely and information is shared without the threat of political censorship. To learn more, head to www.ldp.org.au.
Authorised by John Humphreys for the Liberal Democratic Party, Mount Waverley, Victoria.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back with Dr. Bob Lawrencer. We're having one of these Murphy's Laws days with technicalities over here. This has been an interesting conversation so far. Do you know who Neil Young is?
Yes, I do.
Are you there, sir? Oh, okay.
Yes, yeah. I am.
No, I was just thinking about the free speech conversation we were having and how strange it was for him to want to take his music off of Spotify because of what Joe Rogan had a couple doctors, Dr. Peter McCullough and Dr. Robert Malone, who was actually part of the part of the group that invented the mRNA injection. So it's just kind of odd that you'd have a singer-songwriter of his stature try to dissolve somebody's right to have public discourse on these things. I mean, that to me is kind of alarming, because I just, we're so much about free expression. And yeah, you don't have to, the whole premise of, I don't have to agree with what you say, but I will defend with my life your right to say it, or I'll fight to my death your right to say it. It's like, that's what we grew up with. I mean,
yeah.
Does that unnerve you a little bit that the discourse has changed so dramatically?
Yeah, I think it was his free expression to do what he wishes to.
Right? Well, that's true.
He had to, yeah, so I think it is freedom of speech. He didn't force anything. He actually took his music. He made his decision. He made a free, you know, an open decision. If you don't agree with it, he made a decision. And if you talk about free speech, I think it goes both ways. And you should respect
his
opinion. He's not the government.
Absolutely.
He's an individual person. So,
but
no,
he
that's
is
a
trying
demonstration
to shut,
of free speech.
Yeah, no, that's, I, you know, that is, that no, you are I, right yeah. about that. That's true.
Right, so
but
it's
just odd
ways.
That it's like, yeah, no, I get it. But it's just odd that, like, you know, if Joe Rogan was to say, like, hey, Spotify, take Neil Young's music off this platform or I won't do my podcast, that's kind of them's fighting words. You know what I mean? So you're right. Ultimately, it is
sad,
free speech.
It?
But it's weird.
Sad. It's sad that it has come this way in the United States, that, you know, the parties are doing what, you know, they're taking their toy out of the sandbox and they can't play together anymore. But both sides could end up doing it, right? And the person, you know, the person that he disagreed with his, you know, with his podcast, he could have said, no, I'm going to continue to do what I am going to do, or take me off the network. As far as I understood it, he said, I'll tone it down. I'll change what I'm saying. I'll tone it down. And I think
he didn't say that. Not really.
I got wrong. Okay.
Yeah, he didn't apologize because he had two like illustrious medical professionals on his show. Like Dr. Peter McCullough is like the number one heart specialist in the world. Most lettered heart specialist the world knows. And Dr. Robert Malone helped invent mRNA. These guys are not like micro. Yeah. There's microchips in the vaccine. These are
so
like real deal.
End up saying that Neil Young actually, you know, he expressed his freedom.
Yeah, okay.
By saying what
Fair
he
enough.
Wanted to do.
But
so
we both agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we agree on that. But just kind of in a violent way, in my opinion, spiritually violent. Spiritually violent.
I think we both.
So, what do you think of this?
We both agree that this is problematic.
Yeah. Okay. So, good. I'm glad to hear that. So, what do you think of this WHO pandemic treaty that's just being discussed now, which is a proposed amendment that would give the Director General of the WHO, Tedros, would give him the right to declare health emergencies at will and act on his own. The WHO would have the power to decide what constitutes a pandemic and to decide quarantine measures on a global scale. WHO would control the development and safety of new treatments and would decide vaccine mandates for each country. Now, doesn't that seem like a crazy power overreach to you, all falling on the Director General of the WHO, Tedros?
Yeah.
Is that alarming?
Well, if it is exactly how you state it, it is very alarming. I put the if in front of there. You know, most of these issues.
Oh, and he also says here he's going to make sure there's microchips in every shot. So
yeah.
I'm glad you laughed. You knew it was a joke.
I mean, come on, you gotta laugh about some of this
you
stuff.
You gotta
right?
laugh.
So
it, of course,
if it is as you stated, I don't think the United States will sign on to that, and I don't think most countries would sign on to that. Okay. It is that I think the United States, we recognize that we need to address the global threat from pandemics. The world needs to be prepared. Now, if you look at the WHO and the Director General, there's a trust issue that occurred when this first started. I don't think anybody is going to give it to one nation, one person, if we could say there's going to be a pandemic king. I don't think there's going to be a pandemic king. There's probably going to be a pandemic group of experts that will advise how to move forward. And do we need that? I think, yes, we do. How it's arranged, I don't think that I could, with your statement, I hope that's not true, because I bet it goes on for hundreds, if not, hundreds of pages with details, because treaties, if you want to call it a pandemic treaty, it's going to be very difficult. Yeah, but we need to protect. Wouldn't it have been nice if we would have been able to intervene on this one before it went, crazy? And I think that's the whole idea.
And I want to get to Michigan and maybe a little your backstory and sort of tone down our debate vibe a little bit. But I just let me see if I can find a little resolution here, because I really think you could break down a lot of the way people perceive what's going on as there's the segment of society that really just believes the sort of mainstream narrative of all these situations, be it COVID, be it Ukraine, be it the environment. And there's another segment of society that views all those things as government having a sort of an agenda of control and domination and taking the rights away from people. And I know which side of that debate from what we've had so far that I think you're on the team one, so to speak. And not all the way, because you agree that the Neil Young thing was problematic, though you do agree with his right to be problematic. And so do I. I totally agree. We're totally in cahoots there. But so I think you could almost break it down that way. And then when you talk about things like inflation, and you talk about things like giving $40 billion to Ukraine, for the people on team two that see this as maybe there is this the way the whole world is moving to where there's this insane inflation happening, it's gutting the middle class, it's basically inflation makes life a lot more difficult for the poor and makes them easier to control and sets up sort of a more Marxist or communist sort of society. And I think that's what people are fighting against on team two. And team one is just no, this is just everything is as it says on the label, or what CNN is saying is the truth, and there's nothing behind it, even though there seems to be tons of evidence to my mind. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back on TNT Radio.
Election 2022, and Australia decides on Saturday, May 21st. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
Now we have nearly arrived, and it's only a matter of hours before all Australians will have made a decision which may seal our fate for the next few years. Whatever the result, the fight for freedom must continue post-election day. While the legacy media has distorted the big issues in this election campaign, I must say it was great to see Professor Gigi Foster's appearance on ABC's Q&A last night. Hopefully she will stimulate some thinking among Australians before they vote tomorrow. She slammed the assumption raised by host Tony Jones that Australia has managed to achieve one of the lowest death rates and best performing economies through this pandemic, as if government restrictive actions helped. But correlation does not imply causation, which Professor Foster wisely explained. Let's hope this adds some extra votes tomorrow for the many freedom-loving candidates. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
And
emergency, police, fire, ambulance.
Yeah, g'day, mate. Need an electrician.
Do you need police, fire, or ambulance?
No, I just need an electrician. I've got a couple of crappy PowerPoints I need to get changed
Look,
over.
Look, I'm sorry. I can only connect you to the police, fire, or ambulance.
Well, I need to talk to an electrician.
This is for emergencies only.
This is an emergency. I'm moving into the house and I need to get an electrician to change these PowerPoints.
Triple Zero's sole job is to connect you to your nearest emergency service. So please, stay relevant and save Triple Zero for urgent assistance only.
This is TNT Radio, where you meet the entire menagerie of mankind.
And some who haven't yet been cataloged.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You're not allowed to speak or say what's on your mind, playing hide and seek with the kings that fell behind. Baby, this is war. Played out on our tongues, aimed at what we say, our freedom and our young. If they win this battle, we'll have no real defense, led along like cattle till the slaughter we can sense. For each of us a mission, for each soul to save, to speak on what's been missing, or the wild roads we pave. Oh, but when we peek at the kings of hide and seek, we can't help but remain weak when we're too afraid to speak. But man is now determined. He possesses what we say. His thoughts are being murdered like pigeons made of clay. Scattered through the skies, a gun they load again for the content of your mind, or the right to poke your skin. Propaganda is what comes. Control the poison vines. You're silent for a little while, but soon you're running out of time. And on it goes. The war for every mind. It starts out on your tongue, but pretty soon you're blind. When we peek at the kings of hide and seek, we can't help but remain weak when we're too afraid to speak. Oh, but when we peek at the kings of hide and seek, we can't help but remain weak when we're too afraid to speak. Dun 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 dun. And I think Bob is back on. Dr. Bob, are you there? What happened? Do you hate my guts? You rugged the interview. I thought, oh, this was the, I'm not going to listen to this lunatic anymore. He believes in microchips. I'm out. That's what I thought happened. But it wasn't that, was it?
Damn. Nah.
I was trying to come to some peaceful resolution about the two factions of our world that are basically at war with each other on a psychological and maybe spiritual level, and seeing if we could, you know, find a middle ground somehow. What do you think?
Let's talk about what the federal government should be doing.
Okay, go for it. Let us know. Tell us what you think the federal government should be doing.
Yeah. Should we be focused? You know, I do believe in most freedoms. I think we should have as much freedoms as we possibly can, but still live in a society together of people that have different opinions, different beliefs, religions, you know, across the board, right? So we still have to live together. We still have to have civic virtue to live together. So what should the government really focus on? How about democracy? How about voter integrity? How about healthcare? How about infrastructure, environment, climate? those are areas that probably the federal government needs to be involved in. I don't think you and I want the federal government in our house tell us what to believe, what to, you know, what to say, what not to say. Yeah, so I think the federal government is really very, very important.
Yeah, but don't you notice how much the tone of America has changed over the last few years? And I mean, I know it's a result of, like I said, the two different factions. Faction one would say, yeah, that's just because of the pandemic and this, that. But it's like, man, I've just never lived in a world where civil liberties were up on trial like this and just being, you know, almost demonized. If you even say I'm for freedom or freedom of speech, the very next question you get asked by some is, oh, that means you're a racist. And it's like, wait, what? I just think free speech is important. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's that kind of name calling.
That would be my reply. And that's not a reply of most of us. Well, free speech. No.
That wouldn't be your reply?
Why would it be my reply? No, that would not be my reply.
Yeah, okay, good.
I don't think that's a reply most of us, right? If I'm saying something, like we just talked about, you know, we don't need to get back to it by COVID.
Right.
Medically, the stuff that you brought up is just not sound. So there's disagreement there. But I'm not going
to not sound according to you, but sound according to many people and many doctors as well. So it also just depends on who you're getting your information from and who you choose to believe. Yeah. I mean, if you believe Anthony Fauci and Bill Gates, then you're putting your faith in those guys. If you believe Dr. Peter McCullough and Dr. Robert Malone, then you're putting your faith in those guys. And the people that believe in Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci say that Peter McCullough and Dr. Robert Malone are, you know, full of BS or whatever. But the other side says, you know, so it's like it depends on who you're listening to.
Yeah, I try to listen to even the people. I just listened to a 2-hour presentation of Peter. I don't know. Truth, you know, the problem is with the information now, and I got this quote just this morning that I like, and let me give it to you. It says, truth is increasingly crowdsourced. If enough people like, share, or choose to believe something, others will accept it as true, but it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Truth is really hard to end up finding. Opinions are easy. Medical, facts are difficult to find. And, you know, how am I running? I'm running to try to listen to both sides and, you know, listen to both sides and try to find the truth, not opinions, try to find the truth. I have spent more time with, you know, say with COVID, trying to find out listen to the other side, have listened to it, still don't agree with it, and find out that most people in the medical profession don't. Now, if you don't agree with the mainstream medical, I got it.
What didn't you like about Peter McCullough? What was problematic about your...
renowned. Are we talking about the cardiologist from Texas?
Yeah.
I just listened to another, people as a public health medical director said, listen to this. Okay, I've listened to multiple of his speeches. Then I actually, then I get the same thing. Listen to Fauci. I got it. But, you know, Peter is not well-respected outside of his group that listens to him. You know, that's why you say, you know, just because you end up speak very well. I listened to a presentation of his probably a week or two ago, kept multiple notes on the issues, looked up his statements. I mean, literally, when he was presenting, looked up his statements, looked up the data, looked up the references, called the person back that was ended up asking. I said, if all I knew is what he told you without looking at the data, the science, the studies that he's quoted, I too would believe in him. But, you know, I don't think the average person will go behind what I would be saying or what you would say or Peter ends up saying and really start digging in and try to find out the facts. So, but again, I think the whole idea that I would run on, I would try to run on what's really important to the federal government, try to find the truth as much as possible. and understand to get there, you have to listen to both sides. And both sides have to be willing to talk to each other.
I like that, that's in your campaign. I think, yeah, it's an information. It's like you just said, opinions are rampant. Facts are hard to find. I mean, I'm sure if you levied his facts or Peter McCullough's facts up against Fauci's facts or Bill Gates' facts, that they wouldn't line up. And then it just becomes a matter of who are you trusting, you know, yeah. Who has an agenda, who stands to make a lot of money, who is just doing it at risk of their career. And you know what I mean? And like, you can look at motivations.
Yeah, it's
and
not
also you can
money,
just go
though,
but you can just go with your instincts and stuff like that. And listen, and you know what's great about this, Dr. Bob, is, hey man, I'd still go bowling with you. Like, that's the thing. Like, we disagree on this and that's fine. Like, it's no big deal in my view. Like, I'm cool with, you know, if you ever want to go bowling when I'm in Michigan, I would love to, you know what I mean? Like, we could, you know, and I think people need to have more of that attitude about this discourse and not dig in and make it a life or death thing and end relationships over it, because it is about opinions and stuff. We got 3 minutes left. I want you to talk about your campaign in 3 minutes that you can.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm running in the first district because, you know, for different issues from my opponent, right? So now here's an opinion. The people have to end up choosing. I think both candidates should put their foot forward, show people what they're saying, ask us questions, then you decide who you vote for. So, yeah, I do support election integrity. I do support democracy. I support working families and their children. I support issues to address childhood poverty. I do think the United States has to look at environmental protection, clean energy, a woman's right to choose while being an advocate for life and doing whatever we can to decrease the need for abortions. I believe in livable wages, not the nonsense, you know, federal, $7.25 an hour? How ridiculous is that? I believe in affordable insulin and safe and available baby formula. I believe in infrastructure, and yes, I do believe in universal health care. So those are the issues that I'm running on. That's what separates me from the opponent. Those are issues that the federal government should be involved in. Otherwise, I would say, yep, let me and you go bowling together. You're more than welcome to come over to Upper Michigan and have a campfire and a pontoon boat ride, and we'll send some cheers on the boat. Yeah, we do need to work, live, and play with each other and enjoy each other's companies.
And I think you're a good man. I really do. You're married 40 years, and I just get a good energy from you. I think you're wrong about a lot of things, but you think I'm wrong about a lot of things, and there you go. Who cares? We're going to still have
a campfire here won't solve. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like, in front of a campfire, like, all of our differences just go away. And we're just like there with God and hanging out saying, what's up, Dr. Bob? Did you know you're named after one of the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous? You can't be that bad.
I'm a dictionologist trained too. How do you like that?
You say that again.
I also am trained as an addictionologist. And I'm working on an opioid response. Yeah. So,
okay. Listen, we need to talk again. I'd actually love to have you back on, because we should talk about clean energy, so-called clean energy. We should talk about abortion, and we should talk about addiction. That would be great. I would love to have you back on.
And let's talk about youth mental health, huh?
Yeah, let's do that. Dr. Bob Lawrencer, you're a gentleman, and I appreciate you, and I wish you luck on your campaign.
You're welcome.
And
Thank you very much. Tell people how
to reach you. DrBob.com, right?
Yeah, vote DrBob.com. And, you know, send us an email. We'll address them.
10 seconds. TNT Radio will be... God bless, Dr. Bob. We'll see you soon, people. TNT Radio.